Hey folks, Evan here. Before we get into today's episode, I don't want to start on a downer, but Edmonton and the Indigenous community in Edmonton particularly just suffered a really huge loss. I know the audience for this show is mostly American or international, but I think this community can do some good. So Roxanne Tatousis was a highly respected Indigenous elder and knowledge keeper in Edmonton, who pretty suddenly passed away from COVID just last week. And it's been a really devastating loss. I worked on the same campus that she was working at, and we chat every once in a while, but we weren't the closest. But she had a really extraordinary life and touched a lot of people. So I'm going to put a link to a GoFundMe that her daughters put up in the episode description. It's to fund a round dance and to help make some more ribbon skirts, because that's one of the things that she did a lot and gifted to a lot of her friends. So the GoFundMe is like halfway to its goal, and I think that there's a lot of listeners to this show, so I wanted to start this episode off with hopefully doing a little bit of good. So you can check out the fund for Roxanne Tatousis Memorial, and hopefully you can give a little bit. Anyway, on to the show. Welcome to the latest episode of Kino Lefter, your favorite socialist film podcast based in beautiful, sunny Edmonton, Alberta. I'm your host, Evan, at McDonald Tweets. Thank you again for joining. And today I have a prolific podcaster and author of an upcoming book that we're all very excited to read, Trevor Strunk. Trevor, how are you?
Hey, good. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. The book is called Free Guy, and it's about this city. I hope no one rips it off in the meantime.
Yeah, it's kind of a wacky premise where we're asking Ryan Gosling at the moment, but if he's not available, maybe one of the other Ryans is available. No, of course, the book is called Story Mode: Video Games, the Interplay Between Consoles and Culture. What's the book about, other than the title, which makes it pretty clear what it's about?
Yeah, well, the title's funny because, like, I just tell everyone that it's called Story Mode, which is it's a funny academic title because, I mean, I kind of got my start, bones, beginnings, and whatever I'm doing now in academia. And so I have this urge to give something a really catchy first title and then instantly give it a much more boring subtitle.
Yes.
But the catchy first title is all anyone ever calls it. So that's why you do it. But yeah, Story Mode's about... it's about sort of my examination of series. So, like, thinking about really long arcs, right, in video gaming. So, for instance, something like Final Fantasy. I always use Final Fantasy as an example because it's the longest arc we have in the book. And, it's from, like, 1985 effectively to now, or 1987 to now. And, thinking about the game and how much that first – I mean, there's kind of two ways to ask the question. How much does that first Final Fantasy – I mean, from 1987, look like Final Fantasy, 16 upcoming in 2022 or 23. But also, like, not just, like, do they appear to look like each other, but in fact, like, as it's changed over time, has, like, the actual sort of, like, messaging changed? Has the approach changed? Has the have the politics changed? And I do bring up the politics in all of these games, particularly in, like, vis-a-vis first-person shooters, thinking about military shooters and stuff. But most of the time, I mean, it turns out the politics do change. And I would say, 70% of the time, 60% of the time, they're in more reactionary ways, typically due to fan desires. So the most controversial chapter I'll do is the Metal Gear chapter, because people will be mad at my conclusions. Because I think after two, it changes. And I was like, not super popular. But like the easy one, not that it makes it any less worthwhile of a read and no easier to write, I should say, but sort of the easy one would be like first person shooters become more acceptable. Suddenly people aren't complaining about them so much after 9/11. Why is that? Well, because they suddenly become military shooters. And so like, if they're about the troops, it's okay, right? If you put the veneer of the troops over it, if it's Warzone, maybe you don't want your kids playing it because it's too violent, but you can't have like a systemic problem with it in the same way you could when it was like some guy mowing down demons. And so like that shift, right? Like, does that come from the creators? Does it come from the audience? Does it come from the creators sort of like responding or deciding not to respond? Like, super interesting to me. So like, basically I just kind of looked back at contemporary reviews, read the games myself, kind of looked at this from like a very wide angled way of thinking about like history and the way it interacts with media. I think it turned out pretty interesting.
Well, I'm very excited to read it, and I feel like
thanks.
You know, I'm my partner calls themselves a vibes curator. I feel like I'm similar with podcasting. I didn't just want to call upon you to come on to the Free Guy episode because you do a podcast about video games, and you also happen
it was
to,
a natural fit.
Yeah, and you also happen to talk about politics, those pesky things that get into video games and movies, unfortunately, sometimes. We really want to see a future where we get that stuff out of movies and we get back to, you know, tradition. I think that there's an interesting interplay going on after I see the movie, you know, because, you know, it's illuminated to me about creators, audiences, the fictional worlds they create, the stories we're telling ourselves. And I think Free Guy was a fascinating journey for that.
In terms of vibes curation, it definitely matches, right? Like, this is a movie essentially, like, a lot of ways made for me to talk about it because, like, and you to talk about it at that, because I mean, your analysis of film like totally lends itself to this sort of thing where it's like, this is a movie that would say it's apolitical in the way that like you truly cannot be apolitical in this way, right? It's the most political way to be apolitical. And it, like, even more so, what I thought we'd get when I was going into this was like, I thought we'd get another Marvel movie, basically. Like, I thought we'd get like Ryan Reynolds trying to do an off-brand Marvel movie in between he's Deadpool. So he's not quite sort of in the MCU, kind of not, I don't know. But, you know, in between those, trying to do like another Marvel movie. And it's not that. It's somehow like different and stranger. It's almost like it's like something escaped from 2007 or something. So yeah, it's exciting that way.
I want to start our conversation off with an excerpt from this article that I was scrolling through from the Hollywood Reporter, and I love this this title so much. So for context, Sean Levy is the director. He brought us such films as Cheaper by the Dozen, The Internship, Date Night, and Real Steel, and also the Pink Panther movie from a couple of years ago.
That wow.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Was that a Clouseau movie? Was it Pink Panther, Inspector Clouseau, or?
I think so.
Wow.
I don't think.
I love deciding that like the world really was ready for another Inspector Clouseau movie in the 2000s. It's so good. It's such a cocaine Hollywood idea.
They should bring him back for Free Guy too. But the article headline here is the low-key hustle of Free Guy filmmaker Sean Levy. Quote, I'm willing to outwork anybody. I really like that title. He gets a little bit into the movie. Ryan said, what about making a movie that's about this theme of living in the background and having a more empowered sense of agency and potential impact on a world that is not to your liking and where maybe you can affect change? Folks, that is politics. Free Guy gets a 5-star rating from Kino Lefter. Congratulations, Ryan and company. You did it. This is
socialism. You know what the best way of dealing with politics is exercising your little right to be in the world as an individual with a little technique I call voting.
Mm-hmm.
Vote with your ballot. That's what I always say. Ryan Reynolds says too.
When you put on the sunglasses from Free Guy, you can see voter registration. Here are your candidates. You know,
isn't voter registration the heads up display of reality? If we think about it,
so true. So true. Yeah. You're able to access people's voter information on the fly. When they lie about not voting for Justin Trudeau, you can instantly bring it up and you're like, actually, you did. We love Justin. By the way, if you're listening to this podcast and this is your first episode of the show, I'm Canadian. So that's why I did a little Justin Trudeau reference.
If the Edmonton element didn't tip you off. I mean, in fairness, there are people in America, very nice and intelligent people, who would not know where Edmonton is. But as an avid Oilers, no, just kidding. I'm not an Oilers fan. But
as a BioWare supporter, you must know.
I think I mostly know it because there's a couple of, in the Marxist literary group, there were a couple of people who ended up teaching around Edmonton. I think they were in Vancouver. So like, that's not really around Edmonton, but like, there were sort of like, there were cross pollinations through Canada. And I feel like Edmonton got a couple of them at some point, just like these weird random Marxist literary people who like implanted themselves at universities.
Edmonton, I mean, it's both a very large post-secondary city. And it, you know, it's definitely a crossroads. I'm a Cape Bretoner myself. I'm from our proud Maritime provinces. The Edmonton to Vancouver pipeline is also real. People want to escape Edmonton to go to a better life in BC, but they neglect the fact that we need to make life better here the horrible, evil province that is Alberta.
That's also what Free Guy's about.
So true. It's about doing the work, and it's about showing up and listening and knowing when to speak up.
That's right. And it's also about being an ally.
Honestly, yes. So Free Guy, what does Letterboxd tell me? A bank teller called Guy realizes he is a background character in an open world video game called Free City that will soon go offline. I have to say, that's a pretty good summary. We meet Ryan Reynolds, who of course is a non-player character named Guy, who loves his life. He's in the socialist literature, we'd have to call him a wage cuck. He enjoys his job at the bank. He gets up and, you know, puts his little suit on. And wouldn't you know it, there's a little twist to his everyday life. This bank gets robbed almost every half hour. What's up with that?
What?
But they're all treating it like it's a routine. And I'm sitting in the theater going like, well, that's a little askew.
Now, where's this bank? Is it a Gotham City?
Yeah. Must have taken a friggin' train stop at Hub City in the DC universe, home of the Question. Sorry for that, everyone. I try not to let the DC stuff get into the show too much.
People may not know that. Oh, sorry. That's my daughter's iPad, which
cut
doesn't
this
get
out
silenced
right now.
But I was going to say, you're just like a big Steve Ditko super fan. So, you know, Mr. A, The Question, just like anything that has anything to do with like Randian individuality.
I was about to bring up Mr. A for some niche Steve Ditko laughs.
Love Mr. A. Love Mr. A.
And
no, I don't.
You know, we're big objectivists here on this socialist film podcast. But Guy, he has this dead end job. And then one day he decides to retaliate against a player who, the players in this video game wear sunglasses, which allow them to see the truth of the world, which is, you know, their heads up display, in game stats. If you're real gamers,
you might know it as a HUD.
Oh, exactly. And folks, if you played the video game Apex Legends, if you're playing a Seer, it's kind of like that. You're seeing people's health. You're seeing people's shields.
This guy's played video games. This is serious.
Unfortunately, Seer got nerfed. I've been writing into Respawn about that. I think that was the wrong decision. I think they're listening to the most toxic parts of the fandom. But
rude.
He decides he's not going to fucking take it anymore, and he decides to kill someone at his job. He puts on the sunglasses and he sees, oh, whoa, my whole life is a fucking lie. And there are two classes of people, and one could say that history could be described as conflict between those two classes of people, players and non-player characters.
Right, which is basically, I mean, that's what we've been saying this whole time. It's like, you know, it is a communist film. Finally, someone said it.
And of course, they are all manipulated by the deep state that is Tsunami Game Publishers.
I love Tsunami's spelling. Did you see that?
Like
S-O-O-N.
Yeah, it's so cool. And it's kind of a quirky, it seems like a quirky, fun place to work. What Taika Waititi, celebrated director of Jojo Rabbit, plays the CEO of this company, whom we're not seen doing his day job, which of course would be covering up the gendered harassment and sexual abuse allegations at his game studio, which I have to assume Correct. Is just a Ubisoft-esque company.
Not that you'd ever see all the people working. I don't believe we saw a lot of testers or QA in this massive multiplayer like that everyone seems to play. It seems like this is a very easy ship to run for Taika. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, Antoine.
Antoine. And again, the name is like A-N-T-W-A-N, Antoine. This video game, it's a stolen product. It's the stolen labor of two little game programmers who could. They had a little game, which is kind of like Second Life, but not really. It's all NPCs that you observe. So I guess it's kind of like The Sims, but it's all set in this like nature preserve almost. It's a human zoo where you watch these characters evolve. And the notable thing about the video game is that its AI was years ahead of its time, and these characters were able to change and grow with time. So little do we know, this code still exists in Free City, and Ryan Reynolds is a product of it. And, you know, his code has allowed him to become a sapient artificial intelligence, and he is now using this knowledge to save people in Free City, to play as a good guy in a world gone fucking mad.
I like that there's like a the film's lesson in some ways is like, we could definitely come up with sapient free thinking AI if we just sort of thought about it like a person a little bit. If we were just like a little more empathetic, maybe we'd get this AI right. The reason is we haven't been making it for people we love.
That's so true. And video games are machines that generate empathy. I mean, when I play a David Cage game, I say like, wow, I am in the shoes of this parent screaming for his child at the mall.
I am this robot cop who is black in Detroit in 2048 or whatever. That's what they do. They transport you. It's, you know, and I think that it is funny though, because like, you know, just like, and I'll let you get to the rest of the plot, but like, just the assumptions already, like for anyone who's listening, I mean, this is a film podcast, so maybe you don't, maybe you aren't in as much of the weeds on video games as Evan and I. It's possible. But if you aren't, I just noticed that you called this recording free_city.exe. That's very good.
Thank you.
A couple of things that are so weird about this is like, the one is the idea that these games are easy to make in some ways. Like there are these like plucky young people making wonderful AI code that evil corporations steal. It's really not how it works. Like as like fun of a story as that might be, like I'm sure the corporations steal a bunch of code. It's like, absolutely, I'm sure. But like, you can't, like, you know, it's not like, you know, wonderful developer and writer that I am very, very good friends with, Scott Benson, is like a wonderful person and a wonderful developer and everything. And like, you know, he'd be the first to tell you, like, he's not going to create something that like a AAA studio is going to steal and make into a game. Like, it's impossible. It's just, it's a matter of scale. Like the corollary would be something like if it was a movie where like two people made like an electric car, and we're like mass producing it, and like someone stole it, and they were like, well, now it's Ford's mass produced electric car. It's like, no, I did this with my one friend. Like it's so wild. But of course, like, that's kind of how people think video games happen. It's like, I mean, to take it to a real serious place, it's like the commodity fetish in a way, right? Like, you don't have to see the way the sausage is made at any given point. And Free Guy totally falls into this trap in that, like, you get like six main developer characters, and some are evil and some are like lawful good and just want everyone to have like a wonderful time in their game. It's very funny.
It reminds me this is just another quick aside about video game development, which I'm sure we can get into more later. But I was watching this video where this guy claims to have remade The Simpsons Hit and Run. And this is a game that I have a lot of nostalgia for. And it was so interesting because it really bummed me out at the end of the day, because I was like, okay, one person is going to remake an entire video game. Let's see. So then he was like, yeah, I just used Unreal Engine and I changed the lighting. And then I paid a bunch of other people to, you know, put in this locomotion stuff. And then I got all this free software that these other people made and just shoved it into the game. And it's like the, like accreditation. Yeah, accreditation and labor and authorship over video games is such a like fraught sort of question. And it was a very depressing watch. But to get back to Free Guy for a moment, Ryan Reynolds.
Well, that's what people are always saying these days. Let's get back to Free Guy for a moment.
Yeah, I'm in divorce court. Your Honor, can we just go back? in the film Free Guy, Ryan Reynolds says,
I'll allow it.
Tread lightly, counselor. Ryan Reynolds says, look, you freaks might not have a blue shirt on, but you have a blue shirt in your heart. And then everyone's like, whoa, I can also be free. Ryan Reynolds becomes an international celebrity known as Blue Shirt Guy. No one's ever seen someone level up this fast in the game before. You hear a lot of people say video gamey stuff like that, which is awesome. And yeah,
the news is always following like really good MMO players. We're like, it's so annoying. You get like, okay, you know the serious news, and then it's like, oh, this dog can ride a surfboard, and this guy is super good at MMOs or like shooters. Yeah, I know. Come on, like get to the traffic. It's just every night on the local news.
We'll be back with President Biden's address on the pullout of Americans from Kabul. But Ryan Reynolds is absolutely goated and cracked in Free City 2. We need to be focusing on that. Many are calling him a movement god. Everyone can't stop talking about Blue Shirt Guy. And you get these cuts to like different countries and like, you know, in like Japan or something, and like on this, you know, in a French cafe or whatever. It doesn't really happen, but that's the vibe. People are like, oh, sacre bleu, look at the television. Free Guy is doing it again.
It's El Camisol Azul.
He's also doing this for not quite pussy, but for love. He has fallen in love with, I mean, we've all been there, with a hot lady avatar named Molotov Girl, which is like, okay, some more politics there.
We've all been 13. It's all...
I remember RuneScape.
If only.
Asking people, hey, do you want to be my real life friend? And then they log off and I've never seen them again. That's a very specific memory that haunts me. But
Someone told me they'd give me the best stuff in the game, and they asked me to come down to the 99th floor, and they teleported me, and they stole all my stuff. They killed me and stole my stuff. I've never been the same. Never trusted anyone.
We learn that Molotov Girl is actually this woman named Millie, who is leading a lawsuit against Tsunami Games because she suspects that they've stolen her code. And then Free Guy goes on to create a, in air quotes, strike amongst the NPCs, where this is when I really got, you know, on the edge of my seat. Where the NPCs decide, we are no longer going to serve at the pleasure of the players. We are going to hang out and vibe.
We're going to take the red pill. We're no longer going to be NPCs. They all turn into Pepe the Frog.
The celebrated director of Harlan County, USA, is coming back to do a documentary about this. What would it be? Free City, USA. But the NPCs decide to hang out and not work for the players anymore. And then it all sort of revolves around going to this secret island where the truth is hidden from us right beyond the veil of perception. Will it be revealed?
But enough about Martin Scorsese's classic Shutter Island.
Yes. Similarly to that film, Ryan Reynolds does get a lobotomy at one point in the movie. The servers are reset.
I'm just like, I told you I wouldn't be able to keep it in. We're going to go shot by shot why this is a ripoff of that movie. I mean, it's yeah.
This is going to be a YouTube video. Is the code for Shutter Island in Free Guy? You know, the end of the movie, it's Free Guy. He needs to get to an island, but he is being stopped by Antoine in the real world, who is destroying the servers of this video game. And he is also challenged by this gentleman named Dude, whom, you know, there will probably be plenty to speak about, who is unfinished. The art team tells him that he is a, you know, he's not ready for public consumption, but he's a very muscular version, kind of like a Broly-esque figure of Free
Yes,
Guy.
Very Broly. Yes.
And he has a little tattoo of a blue shirt on, and he speaks. I don't want to say that they're trying to imply that this man is developmentally disabled, but
it might be.
It's kind of that. It felt very 90s.
He's sort of like the big criminal from like, you know, the two mobsters in Bugs Bunny cartoons. There's the short one who's like the smart one, and then there's the big one who's like not the smart one. He's kind of like the big one. He sort of has like big guy in a Looney Tunes cartoon energy.
That's a very good point. And then this is when Ryan Reynolds deploys some movie cameos to save himself from the dude, which we can talk about a little bit later. I want to save that. And then, yeah, he gets to the island, and then they make a new video game or something. And then the two developers realize, oh, we actually love each other, because Ryan Reynolds was a love letter to his female coworker.
How creepy would that be? Like how creepy would it be if you, like, you're just like working with this guy and he's like, hey, what do you think of this NPC? And like, he just likes all the stuff you like, and you're like, did you code this guy? Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe I thought you'd like it. Like, geez, dude, that is so weird.
Deeply uncomfortable. And along the way, I mean, so that's pretty much the plot of the movie.
Antoine destroys the server. He makes them cede all the profit for Free City, as long as they get the code. But then guess what? The market hates Free City too.
Oh, yes.
It's bad. And he loses all his money. And these plucky guys win out in the end anyway.
Yeah, it turns out that it has like the perspective of someone who's like, you know, I don't hate capitalism. I hate crony capitalism. You know, it's the bullies who need to be taken out of the system so we can let small creators rise to the top because of the merits of their work.
Free Guy is really upset about the rent, the eviction bans in America. Like, Free Guy's getting really worried about the landlords, getting very upset on their behalf.
As am I, which we can get into later on the episode. I think one fun place that I'd like to start is talking about the presence of other media professionals. I'll say that as a catch-all term in Free Guy, because we both get an IGN correspondent. The website IGN is featured pretty prominently in the movie, because there's like
little
awards.
And it couldn't have been one of the ones where our friends work. I mean, it's so unfair. Like, it could have had, yeah, I mean, Chris doesn't work for them anymore, but you could have had Chris Person or Gita Jack. You could have had all these people that we know from our lives online. They could have had some of your favorite podcasters. I don't know which ones, but some of your favorites they could have had in the film too. But yeah, no, they have Chris Evans show up.
Mm-hmm.
I read a little story of how that happened. Apparently Chris Evans was across town because I saw it and I was like, what is this? And I clicked on it when it was trending, and the explanation of it was like, Ryan Reynolds texted his friend Chris Evans. I guess you could do that when you're a celebrity. It's like so like po-faced and like, wow. Like, but I guess he asked Chris Evans if he would do it, and Chris Evans said if he could get in and out in 10 minutes, he would, which is stupid because he's in his whole Captain America outfit. So like, he was not in and out in 10 minutes. Like, this was an entire day's shoot, I'm sure. But yeah, he shows up and deploys his shield because Ryan Reynolds, quote unquote, I'll paraphrase it, realized that he worked for Disney now and Disney owned the Avengers. So he could use this toolbox of IP, which is really, in the end, the least crony capitalism thing you could want.
I don't think, like, depression isn't the right word for that whole sequence of, remember, this is a film that's produced by Disney, so we can use these little pieces of equipment from our other franchises that you'll recognize. But it was just, you know, something washed over me that was cold and unpleasant. To go back to the media professionals thing, I'm going to ask the big question.
Yes.
I'm going to send this out. Where was Austin Walker? Austin, where were you? You should have been
asking Austin.
You should have been asking the big questions to Taika Waititi in this movie. So, are you guys excited to release Free City 2? I would have loved to see that.
I would have liked to see him end up on Nextlander, Alex and Vinny, like, just asking him questions about, like, you know, hey man, like, remember this old game, like the Life Island or something? And you're like, this interview's over. Like, I'm not here to take this.
Yeah. Have you guys been
watching... oppositional media?
Have you guys been watching a blue shirt guy? Is it a blue shirt or is it a white and gold shirt, everybody? Come on.
I think what's funny about blue shirt guy being this this media sensation is when, like, this actually happens in real life. And, like, the best example of it, a friend of mine named Tony Palumbi wrote a book, including this, about WoW, called, like, called Blood Plagues and Blood Plagues and something. I'm going to look that up. Tony Blood Plagues.
Yeah, through the power of podcast editing, we can make it very seamless.
Blood Plagues and Endless Raids. And it's about World of Warcraft, and the Blood Plagues is a reference to this incident. I don't know if you know this incident. Maybe you do.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, it turns out, don't. Was this moment in, I think, Burning Crusade, which was like the second expansion, first or second expansion for WoW. I can't remember. But it something happened where basically characters got this. I'll simplify it, but characters got this plague effectively that would gradually decrease their HP to nothing. They just die, right? But it didn't have like a terminus, and you could spread it to every other character you came in contact with. And it was this huge problem in the game, and like, it, you know, they had to like basically shut down for a little bit because everyone was getting like horrible plagues and dying, and they couldn't play the game anymore. And people would grief using it. They'd get the blood plague and then like run into a place where they knew people didn't have it. Like, and the news was not all over this. The people who are over this are people who like video games. As it happens, epidemiologists apparently learned a lot about how diseases spread from it, which is why we have COVID under control. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's like as big a thing as something like Blue Shirt Guy would be, or like even take it a step further, like Ninja showed up at New Year's Eve or whatever, right? Like, yeah, Dick Clark's zombie New Year's Eve, but like, that's the most it gets, right? Like, it's not like the news is like, let's catch you up on Ninja, or like, what's the streaming thing about? Like, will Dr. Disrespect win his lawsuit against Twitch? Like, it's not, like, that never happens. It's like, no one cares about that in the real world. No one, there's not enough people who care about Blue Shirt Guy. There just isn't. Like, it I can't stretch my belief that far.
I'm looking forward to a blowback style podcast talking about how the media failed covering the potential breakup of Dr. Disrespect and Mrs. Assassin.
We gotta get Noah and Brendan on the line. That's like, that's a perfect season three. What they're missing out if they don't do it.
The natural follow up. Yeah, this was a really saddening moment for me watching the movie when because for the audience, if you haven't seen Free Guy, streamers will pop up every once in a while saying, whoa, this blue shirt guy, he's insane. He's incredible at this game. No one's ever seen someone level up like this. Some of your friends, Ninja, is in this, Jacksepticeye. I think her name might be Pokimane.
Oh yeah, Pokimane. Yeah, yeah. Everyone loves Pokimane because she plays video games and is attractive.
Yeah. So I really loved this as you know, someone who regularly watches Twitch streamers. I was saying, that's one of my guys. I know him, and he's talking about video games. Movies, I feel like while I was watching this, I've been a very pro movie person. Like, I think the medium of film, you can accomplish quite a bit in it. It's always been a source of joy for me, even if the movie's bad or something. It's like, you know what, you get to go out to the theater, you get to escape, you know, you get to enjoy that. This time around in the theater, I started to turn on movies a little bit. I said, I think they might in fact just be a poison that sometimes tastes good. And especially
movies
with
are over.
Well, unfortunately the movies aren't over. Like, people are like, is cinema dead? No, cinema maybe has always been bad, and it has just been haunting us for our entire lives. Like, people get upset with the Marvel stuff, right? And obviously there's a lot of criticisms you can make of, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But, like, you know, when characters pop in and out and it's like, oh, you know, they're cameos and everything. This movie literally just takes you out of the action to go to, like, a commentator, you know, talking about G Fuel and everything else, going like, wow, you should watch my stream. The numbers are going up, baby. And, like, you know, the Fortnite dance is happening, and I'm imagining if you see this in a theater with children, they will be doing Fortnite dances, and then people will be saying, Aiden, get back here, get back in your seat. So it was really, like, saddening. I was really frustrated.
It's a little like, it's kind of like, remember there was that brief outrage over Space Jam 2 where they realized that, like, every media personality from Warner Brothers was in the background. Like, they opened the whole vault and included, like, the Droogs and Voldemort and stuff like that. Like, you know, just all the famous rapists and murderers of the Warner Brothers.
I wonder what IP. I wonder what, like, white supremacist codes are hidden in the crowd of Space Jam: A New Legacy. People will be, because you have to comb through that background for years. To find the fun little Easter eggs, you know, back in the day,
well,
if you were
Edward
Norton's an
animator back there with the X on his head, I mean, it's, you know, it's
yeah. If you were an animator back in the 60s or something, you could just write penis in the stars, and, you know, no one would ever notice. But now, ugh, totally different
world.
Yeah,
they got you can get the assets now. You're done. But yeah, it's sort of like that with Space Jam. Everyone freaked out and was like, "What does this mean for IP? Like, this is just an IP like mess, melange. It's horrible. It's Frederick Jameson gone crazy." But, like, no one really cares about it with Free Guy. And I feel like it's more egregious with Free Guy in that, like, you get little ads of people you don't care about but who got in the movie to be able to be like, you know, like, it's literally podcast Twitch culture where, like, it's fine on a podcast and Twitch. Like, I come on your podcast or you would come on my podcast, which you're certainly welcome to do anytime you'd like. And you know, like, when I'll go on, which I've done a couple of times, not very recently, but, like, I'll beg Jesse to let me go on the Go Off Kings, and he'll let me embarrass myself for a night on their stream. Like, you know, like, I'll mention my podcast or my book or whatever, and that's just expected. You know, that's fine. You have a guest on, they mention what they're doing. That's fine. No one, it's almost like white noise to people.
It's the industry.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if you listen to, like, Comedy Bang Bang, they make a joke out of it. Like, you know, they have, like, a plug bag theme that's, like, extremely irritating, and, like, it's all a gag. But, like, to put that in a film, to be like, oh, here's this actor I got to be in here, or, like, you know, like, I'm thinking about it in, like, Something About Mary is the example I always think of a celebrity cameo, because Brett Favre shows up at the end, being the Brett that we find out that Mary is holding a flame for Mary. And Brett Favre shows up and everyone's like, oh my God, it's Brett Favre. But Brett Favre doesn't look at the camera and say, like, see you all in Lambeau this year. Go Packers. Like, that's not what you're supposed to do with the cameo. It's just supposed to be funny. You're supposed to be like, oh, it's Brett Favre. That's weird. I didn't expect to see him here. Or, like, you know, in, like, even like an Airplane where Leslie Nielsen showed up and he was a dramatic actor before, you were like, oh wow, it's that Leslie Nielsen guy. He's always in those movies being serious. Like, This is them showing up and then being like, thanks for letting me do this cameo. If you like this, be sure to check me out at twitch.tv/ninja. Like, that's so insulting. That's so bad. Like, it doesn't even have the veneer of legitimacy.
Yeah, I've been trying to think of a clever catch-all term for this. You'll be able to see it when I finally write that Jacobin article I've been thinking about.
Bhaskar has been DMing me and asking, like, I don't DM with Bhaskar, I'm sorry. I don't want to give you hope there, but like, he's been DMing me saying, like, where's that article from Evan? I need this term.
They're breaking down the doors of my DM saying, they're Evan, desperate. Where is it?
Stop being so thirsty. I'll get it to you.
My current thinking for this is that they're Fortnite movies, where my thesis is that Fortnite is, like, obviously both the present and the future of entertainment, because it's proven to be such a successful model for spinning off basically anything and incorporating any intellectual property into, you know, the whole. Like, they're just doing, like, Fortnite Presents Among Us now, and that's, like... You know, incredible. And, like, Ariana Grande's doing concerts.
Dude is in Fortnite now. Did you see that? Ryan Reynolds' dude is in Fortnite now.
Is this a joke?
No, I'm not messing with you. Here, hold on. I'll find it.
Yeah, I feel like it seems like it's a... Much like when Iron Man came out and studios were thinking, we can do a cinematic universe with our properties and that will just add value to the product. So if someone didn't want to go see... the film at first, they'll be like, but there is the promise that my investment as a fan will be rewarded down the road. There's that iteration of this sort of phenomenon in entertainment. But now we have, like,
I just DM'd you the dude picture. If you'd like to see dude in Fortnite,
excellent.
Fully ruin your mind. You were making a salient point, but at the same point, I feel like this is something that you need to see to upset you.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense for this podcast. You know, it's like a third or a quarter serious political conversation. And then, you know, people will message me saying, wow, Evan, that really opened my eyes about, you know, why Free Guy was based or why he was cringe. Oh, Jesus, mother of God. I am looking at a screenshot of Fortnite with dude and then just collab a tag there. But it's beautiful. And I want my children to play this. I want them to be playing Fortnite saying, and this is really fascinating because I'm a big comics guy, you know, unfortunately. You know, I follow a lot of, like, comic book writers and artists on Twitter, and often, like, their kids' first exposure to comic book characters is Fortnite. And I feel like it just speaks to not just, like, generational differences, but how, you know, media consumption patterns are changing, where, you know, they'll see Batman in Fortnite and they're not familiar with Batman from movies or animated television shows. Their first introduction is Fortnite. And it's such a weird thing, but, like, one of the best-selling comics of the year is Batman Fortnite 0 Point, which is this tie-in comic that DC did with Fortnite, and it sold like gangbusters. And it's just...
It's so bad.
Yeah.
As a lapsed comic guy, this is very painful for me to hear.
Mm-hmm. The industry's in a great place right now.
I've noticed that. I thought about dropping by. I had to go to a hospital today to visit someone, and I realized I was close by to my old comic book shop. And briefly, because I, you know, you never are super happy when you're at a hospital, so I was thinking, ugh, it'd be nice to sort of do something comforting and go to the old comic book shop. And I remembered, like, comics now have a universe where, like, everyone's the Joker and, like, stuff. Like, I was like, that's gonna make me feel a lot worse. So I bought a milkshake. That was my compromise.
Nice. A classic snack and beverage. it's really interesting because, like, now, I mean, Fortnite movies is sort of my go-to term for this, where you get this sort of heavy use on the metaphysics of the world of the film, wherein it is very easy for intellectual property crossovers to happen. So in this movie, we get Ryan Reynolds using Captain America's shield, the Hulk's fists, and a lightsaber with accompanying musical cues saying, this is a lightsaber from Star Wars, or this is a shield from Avengers. And then my audience theater was like, whoa, that's awesome. And, you know, it was epic because then you remember, wait, Disney produced this. This is so sick. And going back to that article that I started off with, the low-key hustle of Free Guy filmmaker Sean Levy, it reminded me that Free Guy is the only tentpole film this year that is an original IP. And now this is technically an original IP, which I think is beautiful. I think that is fine, and movies are good.
See, what's funny to me, so like, I don't know if you're familiar with this podcast or not. I was on it and I listened to it a bit because some friends of mine do it. The wonderful Twitter user, fucking A. Palmer, who's lovely, did a podcast, I think with their brother, called Spall Talk, which was all the films of Timothy Spall, who, wonderful concept for a podcast.
Absolutely.
And they had me do, they had me watch a movie called Upside, I think it was called Upside Down, with him. And it was about like the premise of the film was, like basically it was that there was like a poor world and a rich world, and they were separated by opposing gravities. And it's very weird, like kind of a Romeo Juliet sort of thing. It kind of worked, kind of didn't. Timothy Spall was great in it. But I was thinking about that movie when I was thinking about this movie. I mean, maybe it's because two movie podcasts, I'm not sure. But part of me was like, okay, yeah, that movie didn't work. That Timothy Spall movie, like, it was fine. It didn't work. It was a shot though, right? Like, that person gave it a shot. That was an original idea. They did it. It wasn't like, you know, it's not a cult classic or anything. It's just a bargain. It's like Gattaca or something, you know, like whatever. But this is also that, but the version that we get today is not some sort of flawed attempt, right? It's like a flawed attempt that is then like, let's bolster this with a bunch of stuff the audience is going to meme and get excited about. Like, I want this clip all over Twitter. Like, I want Ryan Reynolds being dude everywhere. Like, this is funny and people will think it's like epic and win. And like that's depressing. Like, that's just like making a Mountain Dew ad. Like, it's like when David Lynch in like 2008 was like freaking out about people watching his movies on a cell phone. And you're like, oh, David Lynch, you love overreacting. And now it's like, no, he was totally right. Like, that's all we do now. Like, that's it. One thing I really want, I wanted to stop and say your point about like these being Fortnite movies is great, because the metaphysics of Fortnite is a wonderful way of thinking about it, or sort of like the way that it imagines like epistemology or like the idea of knowledge in and of itself, that it is in fact not like discrete ideas, but like everything fits into a box if you push it hard enough. Mm-hmm. Like Cammy and Guile from Street Fighter in Fortnite, and like not just Batman but Spider-Man, or like the Avengers or whatever. And like it feels like those games that you'd play with your friends where you just had like a limited number of action figures, and so you'd be like, all right, well, Batman and Captain America are teaming up and they're fighting the villains like Wolverine and Spider-Man. And it's like, okay, we're all down with that because we like no one has any better figures. Like we're all just like doing the best we can here. But it's what everyone chooses to enjoy. So I think like imagining that as a new way media works, like as a kind of like there are no separate ideas, just like a arena style mixture of concepts that never differentiate is like, I totally agree. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's very, very compelling. One thing that I find interesting actually leads into this, and I did warn you that I would want to talk about this. When this movie came out, I saw people call it Soy They Live, which is mean, because let's not fall into the binary of soy and not soy. Come on. But it is in many ways, like epic win They Live, or looks like it, right? Because the way he sees the world is by way of sunglasses. And for people who haven't seen John Carpenter's They Live, it's a film where Rowdy Roddy Piper, the beloved thespian, gets a pair of glasses, puts them on, and realizes that everyone around him in the world is some sort of alien that wants to like harvest his you know, energy. And so like it says, like he puts on the glasses and all of a sudden all the billboards say like eat, produce, or eat, reproduce, like sleep, buy, stuff like that. And he takes them off and it's like, oh, you know, like enjoy this new TV. Puts them on again. And all the like the people on the news are reptiles. And like half the people in the street are reptiles. You're like, oh my God, like what is this? And They Live is like, They Live's a fun movie. I like They Live. They Live is also like a fairly clumsy critique of capitalism. Yeah. Like it's a good critique of capitalism in the way that like Dawn of the Dead is a good critique of capitalism, in that you can be like, okay, like if you just want, like if you're having a tough time realizing why malls can be bad, you gotta get there first. There's no shame in that. Just watch this one first and then we'll get you to the next one. But like it's a fun movie, and this is interesting because like I don't think it is They Live, and the reason I don't think it's They Live is because the glasses don't play nearly as much of a role, right? Like they're the initial sort of waking up thing, and then the rest is a romance, right? Like the ultimate sort of like revelation for Free Guy is a kiss, and it's like, okay, it's like a, you know, you're just doing like a typical sort of action romance movie. It's like it's as much I don't know why I'm referencing so many old movies. It's as much Romancing the Stone as it is like They Live, right? But like the point about They Live which is interesting to me, is that like, and you pointed it out like sort of tongue in cheek, but it's true, like that when he puts on the glasses, he realizes that the world around him is a construct. But it's not like in They Live where it's like this construct is unacceptable, to the mm-hmm. point where you get that funny scene where Roddy Piper pile drives the guy like six times trying to get him to put on glasses. But like, if you want to take that scene, like if you want to put like
whoa,
the scene
is that
in like
Slavoj Žižek, how did you get on
whoa,
this call, bud?
Get out of here, Slavoj. Jesus. Oh, he's over for a beer. He ran in here. No, if you want to do like Slavoj Žižek-y and sort of like, I'm going to read too much into this film, like the putting on the glass, I mean, he's done readings of They Live, but like the putting on the glasses thing, like the intensity of him wanting him to put on the glasses, right, that he would get into a knockout fist fight, is like indicative of the idea that like, no, this is unacceptable and everyone has to see why it's unacceptable. Whereas in Free Guy, he sort of sees that it's wrong. His friend Buddy believes him. But like he's like, well, how do I talk to this girl again? And he's like, oh, I know what I'll do. And he comes up with like, it's like a Pixar movie solution, right? Like, yeah. Not even. That's actually it's more like a DreamWorks movie solution, where like, you know, you get, it's like, what's a plucky idea I can have? Oh, I'll do good deeds instead of bad. Like it's opposite world. And like the observation there is not, this is unacceptable. The observation's like, the way this is, it goes back to what you were saying about crony capitalism. It's like, the way this is unacceptable. We need to make this world acceptable again. And it's not, you know, we need to make it free to the users, because it ostensibly is, because it's using the Fortnite model. It's all, you know, added on purchases. And in the end, we hear about all the profits that like Life Island 2 is making or whatever. So like, it's not about that. It's just about saying like, man, I wish I was making money better. Mm-hmm. And not as evilly. And that's like, that's such a more toothless critique. Like, it's such a shame that like, I'm not expecting Free Guy to be like, Free Guy ends up being, I have to say, I'll admit it, Free Guy's a much more interesting film than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Like it tries things that I did not expect it to try. I think the strange sort of like, the code is hidden in the machine. We have to like have sort of like a dive into the code and stuff like that. Good, it's Island. That's sort of interesting. It's fun. It has an arc. And it is, I mean, look, it's depressing that this is what we've come to, but it is its own original IP. Like, no one's done a Free Guy before, ostensibly. Although when you see it, people are like, it's a mix of Grand Theft Auto and like, you know, like, I don't know. You've got mail or whatever. Like, it's like, God, this is horrible. But like, it is more interesting than I thought it would be, for sure. It's a shame though that like what we see as interesting at this point is just like, or like what we see as political at this point is someone being like, hey, I don't think things are quite as fair as they should be. And then like, I'll just do the right thing for a while. And eventually someone's going to notice. Yeah. And then the entire world notices. And so they're like, hey, this guy's doing the right thing. And so it constantly works out. Like, it's just, it's, and I'll stop. I'm on a rant here, Jim. No, like I'll stop, but like the like, especially now, especially like looking at how the world works now, like, it's so insulting. Like, you know, when I say like I don't know if I said this when we were recording or not, but like, it feels like a movie that escaped out of 2007. And part of that's because, like, you could have Pablum like this in 2007. Like, when Crash won the Oscar, you can have Pablum like that, where it's like, if everyone does the right thing, maybe we'll all be good again. I don't see how you can sell that in 2021. Like, I don't know why people would end up buying that. It's so weird.
Yeah, this is my thinking with seeing Free Guy through the lens of its creators, which is that this is a movie about someone who wants to affect change in the world and stop being a background character, a literal NPC, and, you know, hold on to the steering wheel of life, then, you know, shove on the gas and crash into a bank. It's really interesting because I feel like this film, it's of akin with films like Joker. That was actually one of the first movies I thought of after watching this, where
interesting.
I think Joker, I'm mildly pro Joker. I do enjoy the film.
I like Joaquin Phoenix. I think he's a fun actor.
Phenomenal.
So I have a hard time being anti Joker entirely.
Yeah. I don't support what he does. That's where I sort of draw the line. It is about, you know, the world is a cruel place, or it has an unjust power structure. So once you are awakened to that truth, you need to affect change on it. And then, you know, that obviously this is the product of a film studio, and you can, the thing that they're tapping into here is that they have an understanding of millennials, where millennials care about positive social change, right? It doesn't matter what the outcome is. It matters that there is an awareness of it, and there's care, and that there's action demonstrated. So yep. One of the central differentiating factors between the world of Free City, the video game, and our human lives is that the oppression that the NPCs face is almost one of boredom or feeling trapped in their lives, like a dead-end career. They respawn. That's a very important thing. They aren't like dragged out into an alley and actually murdered by player characters because they wake up, right?
Yeah.
They can keep going back to their jobs, and there's comfort with that, right? You know, it's this comfort of you know, the mundane normalcy. But the panic with Ryan Reynolds isn't one of like, oh my God, like, they're taking the lives of my friends, or, you know, is this all there is because, you know, I still have the scars of, you know, these player characters treating me this badly. It is sort of this, it is in the same sort of vein of stuck in a job you don't like, and, you know, you just have to, deal with getting murdered at the job. So then I was very interested because they do use the language of like, we're going to go on strike. Like, we're withdrawing our labor. And of course, this is paired with like an actual like boss worker relationship with the game studio. And I'm thinking about the writing process for this movie, because of course, like, there are movie writers who, you know, maybe have good politics, who care about these issues, and, you know, want to highlight them in the best way that they can. And then, you know, obviously that shifts while the movie's in production. So you get a mishmash of stories, because the NPCs, they do gain awareness. They gain more just conditions for themselves, which is being in a different video game where they're not subjected to, you know, the whims of player characters. So they're taken out of the picture, which, you know, has to be some sort of win. I guess if someone is like, I'm imagining some sort of opponent who's arguing that like Free Guy is a left text or something. I don't know why I'm doing that.
But oh, it'll happen. Don't you fear.
They're typing it out right now. But like, it's nice that, you know, they even use the word strike, and it makes a strike look cool, which I was like, yay, that's nice.
Yeah, that's a win.
It's in the W column. But this isn't, it isn't Matewan, you know, it isn't Harlan County, USA. There aren't Pinkertons that, the video game company needs to send in. There is Dude, who's the closest thing we get to a Pinkerton, who needs to stop this.
He wins him over by talking with him. I mean, this is that's the thing, right? Like he like convinces him because he's like, you're me. Like, but like also ultimately all of the action that the NPCs take is in service of the players too. Like it, it has that essential myth of capitalism, which is that like, hey, you know, we all want the same thing. Come on. Like ultimately, can't we just all like kind of get along? Like if we got down and sat down with each other, I'm pretty sure we could work this out. And like, ultimately that's what the movie says. Like they want the original game more than they want Free City 2, because Free City 2 bombs. So the idea is like, yeah, like that's much better. Like this, you know, Life Island or whatever is much better than Free City, because we're not killing people. It's like, I don't know. Like it is this kind of like they're going on strike, but ultimately they're going on strike to convince their bosses that they want the same thing, which is, it's not adversarial. It's no longer adversarial, especially as like the Twitch streamers are like, this blue shirt guy's pretty neat, instead of like, this blue shirt guy's a griefer and I hate him, and we have to find him and kill him whenever we can.
I think that one of the big things that holds back this narrative of like withdrawing labor and identifying like who is oppressed and who are the oppressors in the world of Free City, I have to take myself aback here. I'm treating Free Guy as a serious political text, but of course that's the mission of this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, and you've made, I think you've been very tongue in cheek. We both have, like,
yeah,
look, it's not, it's, and like, I think once you bring in the IPs and the media people, there's no way. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that point it's a commercial as much as it is a movie.
Yeah. But of course, like the computer generated people within these games, whom we recognize have, you know, digital souls. They are people, essentially. There's never conflict between the NPCs and Tsunami Games, the publisher, because the true, like, hand at the mechanism of their oppression are the game publishers and, you know, Antoine himself. But they only recognize the players of the game, so they're not correctly identifying the structure which is actually holding them down, which is a AAA video game development.
They're fighting the petty bourgeois. They aren't getting the owners.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And like, I think again that comes back to the way that this movie represents game development as labor, mm-hmm. which is like, it's a big idea thing, right? Like, oh, people come up with ideas and then they code their ideas and it becomes a thing. Like that's not how it works. That's not why games cost so much, and why they ought to probably cost even more. It's not why games like cost, you know, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to make, you know, your Last of Us 2s or whatever, and why like people get crunched under the wheels of like long hours to do it. It's because like someone has that idea and then it's like, okay, now in order to make this idea happen, we have to code every single second of it and every single possibility, and like we have to test it again and again and again and again. And like, to take that out of it, it really is sort of like this romantic Wild West of like, these two crazy kids had an idea and one of them was in love and like the company stole it, and like now it's a story of like of like young love winning over corporate power. It's like, yeah, doesn't really, it's not a surprise that the publisher does not get thrown under the bus, but in fact Antoine does. Mm-hmm. Right.
And of course the solution to the problems of the film, create a better game company, you know, one that's more responsive to its community, and creates a better product that we can celebrate, and of course is very profitable.
It was cool how at the end they created Bethesda. I thought that was neat. I thought that was cool that they were releasing Skyrim in the movie, that you can actually now like go see Free Guy and play a full version of Skyrim at the same time. It's very Todd Howard has done it again.
Hats off to you, Todd. Let's get into our final thoughts on Free Guy. I'll go first. I did not enjoy my viewing of Free Guy. I was very depressed during a lot of this. It feels like a dumber Lego movie. Like, it's a less enjoyable version of the Lego movie. It has, like, a extremely similar structure.
Yeah.
But, sure. Yeah, it's another Fortnite movie. You can add it to the canon. And, yeah, it made me sad. There were some moments where, like, if you still find Ryan Reynolds funny, or if you really enjoyed Deadpool 2, you are in the target audience for this film. If you own a Thanos snapback, you're in the target audience for the film. If you're not, I don't know if you'll have a fun time at the movies. But that's what it's getting from me. Trev, how about yourself?
So yeah, I kind of found myself feeling, I suppose I liked some of it when it was happening. Like, I can turn my brain off and watch action scenes and stuff like that and have fun. And these movies always provide that, like, you know, there's always some sort of like great spectacle to watch, and like, you know, no difference here. But there's something really puzzling to me about the film. And like, yes, in terms of the way that it does cameos and IP and stuff like that, which is just depressing. I agree with your term there. It is depressing. It's like, it's frustrating and sad. Like, especially as someone who like thrived on crossovers and stuff as a kid with comics, or like was dreaming of a Spider-Man movie at one point when it didn't seem like it would ever happen. You know, like, now it's like, this is just so like wasted and wrung out and sad. But also that, like, the movie sort of is that, and like, talking with you has helped me kind of like pin down what frustrates me about it, is like, it does the sort of Ferris Bueller's Day Off thing of being like, what if we just like said, we're not doing this anymore. But Ferris Bueller's Day Off, like, people are always like, well, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a mess because Ferris is the bad guy in it. But like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off recognizes the Ferris is the bad guy. Ferris Bueller's Day Off is like melancholic. It doesn't end with like him being like, yeah, so we succeeded. Like, it ends with them realizing that, like, yeah, this is one fun day, but like, this is not going to be the rest of our lives. We can't do this every day. Eventually we're going to have like the same life that Cameron's dad has and like live in, you know, quiet desperation. And like, that's a really poignant thing. And it's in like a silly, you know, comedy, right? Like, it's a teen comedy. But like, Free Guy goes to the let's do everything, and then at the end says like, and we can have it all, and that's the end of the movie. And like, for that to be a lesson in like a movie is like really troubling. Like, there's something really troubling about that, to be like, there's no downside, everyone can be happy all the time, is just like, it's politically bad, but like, maybe more so, it's just like thematically bad. So I wouldn't recommend it.
No, it's not getting the thumbs up from Kino Lefter. There's a reason it was Free Guy, because it was fucking broken. That's why it's on the side of the road. So let's get
don't buy the customizables for this. Full default. It's just, you know.
Let's get into Reconradations, where we talk about, it's a fan favorite segment where we talk about the pieces of media, life experiences, or anything else under the sun that we've enjoyed this week that we want to pass along to you, the Kino Lefter audience. Would you like to start us off this week?
Sure, I would love that. So actually, I was hesitant to bring this up because I won't be the first person you've heard talk about it, but I've really been enjoying it, and it came out last year, so I'm a little late to it, but I've really been enjoying Hades, the game by Supergiant.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're interested in how NPCs can work in interesting ways, Hades is a much better game than Free Guy's version. It's just really fun. The mechanics are great. The storytelling is wonderful. I think it just does a great job of messing with Greek myth and video game logic in a way that, like, you get those sort of Fortnite-y cameos, but like, it's never frivolous, right? Like, even the game will, like, it teases cameos, like, oh, it's like, I wonder if I'm gonna see Hercules coming up, and instead it's like Theseus. It's like, oh, I don't want to see him, I want to see Hercules, and the game doesn't give him to you, right? Like, that's like the thing, right? Like, it is a game that is very much like its own story, and like understands that it can torment you with that, and I just think it's a great game. It's really good. As for things that came out just recently, I don't know. I would say, you know what? They're having a moment. So if you're frustrated with something like Free Guy, maybe try a visual novel. I know that The Silver Case by Suda, who is releasing No More Heroes 3, I think this week. The Silver Case just came out for Switch, bundled, I believe, with the 25th Ward, its sequel. I would play that to get a sense of like what it looks like when you just get a standard narrative in form of a video game. It is much more experimental and creative than Free Guy. I'll absolutely say that. So those are my two recommendations. I don't know if you do too. I just figured like I'd do something a little more current.
You can do two. Two is a very acceptable number on this show. You know, I'm going to go with one this week. I'm going to recommend a podcast episode from a sister show of this one, Alberta Advantage. You know, if you've heard of Kino Lefter, you've probably heard of Alberta Advantage already, so I don't have to do too much marketing for them. Wouldn't you know it, the family connection to this program, my cousin Rory is on this episode, so he's an absolute king, and you have to listen to it. It's an episode called Tories, Lougheed, 1971 to 1985. So if you're not overly familiar with Alberta politics, Alberta had the longest reigning government, I think, in any democratic jurisdiction. The Progressive Conservatives controlled Alberta for 44 years. So that dynasty was broken for exactly one election, and then the NDP fucked it up and they got kicked out. Now they're trying to get back in. This podcast episode is about mythologized Alberta Premier Peter Lougheed his history with the Alberta labor movement how people try to claim his political legacy, especially the seeming center left in this province. So very, very interesting listen. So I would recommend that pretty highly.
I'm convinced.
Trevor, thank you so much for visiting the Kino Lefter podcast. Absolute pleasure to have you on.
A pleasure to be here.
Where can people find you? Where can people support your work? And when does that frickin' book come out?
Hey, you know, your guess is as good as... No, it's not. It's coming out at the end of November. You can pre-order it now. Most bookstores, just Google Strunk Story Mode. It's Strunk is my last name. Or just Story Mode. You might find it that way, too. It's kind of a little common of a name, but I think it comes up. The podcast is No Cartridge. You can listen to No Cartridge pretty much anywhere, too. I think it's on most platforms. And if you can't find either, I'm at Hagelbun on Twitter. And there's a Patreon, patreon.com/nocartridge, but, you know, listen to the free podcast first, decide if you want to hear more. But yeah, no, those are all the places you can go listen to what I'm up to. I haven't listened to that episode of Alberta yet, but I will. That sounds fantastic.
Beautiful. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can rate and review the show on iTunes.
Please do.
We got one recent review in, which was very funny. It was a 3-star review, and the guy said, "I liked the episode on the mule, but I didn't like the woman." Thanks for the review, buddy. Any press is good press in this business, I guess. You can hit up the Patreon at patreon.com/KinoLefter. Are most of the episodes in there about Planet of the Apes right now? Yes, because I'm doing a 9-part Planet of the Apes series.
That's a selling point.
And absolutely. And we just had Professor Shama Rangwala on to talk about the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes movie.
Nice.
A very good episode. And we're moving on to the reboot trilogy, which I'm a very big fan of. And the most recent episode in there is a fun conversation I had with Duncan Kinney from the Progress Report about the Parallax View. So I think that's a movie people have been wanting to hear an episode about. So you can do so over there. And if you're a little freak and you can't get enough of this podcast, the links to the Discord and the Facebook group are in the episode description. Well, that's going to be it for me this week. Thank you so much for listening. And I will see you here again in your podcatcher of choice next week. Bye-bye.
Kino Lefter is a proud member of the Harbinger Media Network. You can find great leftist Canadian podcasts like Big Shiny Takes, 49th Parallel, Le Plancher des Vaches, Habiti Please, Alberta Advantage, Tech Won't Save Us, and The Progress Report on the network. To find out more and become a supporter of the network, head over to harbingermedianetwork.com.